Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Matt Harmon, joined by Dalton Del Don. Luckily, that doesn't make any sense. I'm glad to be joined by Dalton Del Don for our weekly Stat Nerd podcast. Dalton, we've got a lot of actually really good stat notes to dive into today. I think we're going to go in a lot of different directions with these talking points. I know I'm excited about it, mostly because it's going to help me prepare for my Friday column. That's really, I'm here for you're here mostly to help me do my work. That's really what this is all about.
I'm excited to talk to you, man. Week one was crazy. Harmon, I even shot you a text last week because my main takeaway, we'll get to the Niners stuff, but I hyped Ronald Jones last week. Dude loses a fumble immediately, he's benched. I mean, it's just, it couldn't have been more perfect. I had to shoot you a text. Like, my guy Ronald, man, doing work on national TV. I also like Damian Harris, who was benched, and Ayuk. So forget as if the performance and injuries I already had to worry about. Now we have to worry about benchings too quite a bit. But anyway, how was your week one, Matt?
Well, let me tell you this, Dalton. It was funny when you texted me because, number one, nobody texts me, really. I'm not a big texter. Nobody texts me. And the fact that I look at my phone, I was like, oh, it's Dalton who never texts me. I'm like, this must be. And I actually was, upstairs at the time. I wasn't in front of the TV. I'd left it for like 2 seconds. And I was like, oh, what did Ronald Jones do? I was like, oh, he freaking fumbled. So it was a great, I got a good kick out of that. I appreciate it. What a rock star. But yeah, we've got a lot to get into today, man. Incredible week one all the way around. I enjoyed it, but also just a lot of stuff to parse through as well. But before we get to all the stats, all the notes that we've got today, a little pre-show business to get out of the way first. You could still sign up for a Yahoo Fantasy League at sports.yahoo.com/fantasy. Boom. If you're not doing it yet, what are you waiting for? The time is now. Sign up also. You can sign up for Yahoo Fantasy Plus. Take it for a test drive with a free trial. You get all sorts of research tools and data unavailable to non-plus players. If you're looking to make a trade after week one, which I know 1,000 people are trying to do right now, the Trade Hub will let you know whether it's a good idea or not. Again, that's yahoofantasyfootball.com/plus. All right, we're going to get into stats and the trends that we love to see just in a minute here. But Dalton, I know you wanted to talk about some FOB bids recently because I we're in a league together. I think you you unloaded it on Elijah Mitchell, right? Or what are your thoughts here on this whole situation? Because I know I got to check your pulse with this because you are my Niners resource here.
I know the Niners have been talked about to death, but I feel like with Yahoo's Fab running on Tuesday nights, this Wednesday show is a good time to, I know it doesn't come out until Thursdays, but you know, there's some interesting, some weeks are more interesting than others. And this one with Elijah Mitchell, you know, suddenly coming out of nowhere, basically rostered in you know, what, 1% of Yahoo leagues or fewer, is the number one pickup. And so the counter to him is that Trey Sermon is going to, you know, suddenly he could be the guy getting the carries. It's the shenanigans. You don't know what's going to happen. Jeff Wilson's going to eventually return. There's certainly downside. It actually almost certainly will not work out in your favor if you went big on Mitchell. I went 100% in all leagues I was in because wow. the upside is I think if there was like an NFC primetime high stakes league, he would be like, I don't know, maybe like a fourth or fifth round pick, you know, given the Niners situation. And the fact that Trey Sermon, by the way, is extremely injury prone himself, dating back to college. DeMichael Hasty missed 3 blocks so bad, he may be inactive, man. He might put him in mothballs. He nearly killed Jimmy G. And I like Hasty. He runs hard, but he made some bad pass protection mistakes. Wayne Gallman's released. Kerryon Johnson, they signed. He still has a knee brace. The Niners fantasy playoff schedule has been talked about preseason. Let's not forget they still are set to face the Falcons, Titans, and Texans, those 3 games. I mean, this guy looks like Mostert. He passes the eye test. You look at his workout metrics, Mitchell, and they were really, he's really, really fast. You know, and Shanahan, yes, the shenanigans, but he's also, he's the last undrafted rookie to run for week one. Mike Anderson under Shanahan run for more than 100 yards. So I don't know, given the situation with the Niners have by far the easiest schedule in football, great offensive line, and now Mitchell's the current number one. I think he's worth the risk in leagues that allow $0 bids and first come, first serve. Now, tricky ones are NFFC where there are no $0 bids and you can't go 100% in your fab. That's totally different. But we're in an industry league. I bid 100%. People kind of laughed at me behind the scenes and talked about how aggressive it was. My guess is I misread the room completely, because this is a super flex league that Taylor Heinicke went for $6. And I could make the argument that he should have been a max bid too in a super flex. So every league is different. I was in another league where I bid 100 on Mitchell, and I finished tied for fifth because six people bid 100, yeah, and I was fifth in the tiebreaker. So it's all league dependent, but Elijah Mitchell definitely on the fantasy radar and the number one waiver wire guy to talk about him after week one.
Yeah, fab advice, I think, is the most, like, everything is league dependent when you really want to get down to it. Like, the fact that we try to give advice for every single format is really challenging if you just really want to be completely transparent about it. But like, knowing your league is so crucial to everything, but I think it's especially the case with fab. I think, like, people that want to, like, which percentage of my this, that, or the other is always so difficult to answer, because it does depend on reading the room, on reading your league mates. And that, this situation is crucial, because, yeah, there are spots where I went about 40 to 50 feeling pretty good and didn't even come close. There are spots that I went 40 to 50 and was close or got him. So it really does. It really does depend. It does depend on your league and everything like that. And just, it is hilarious. You mentioned the 49ers have been talked to death. I know on this podcast specifically, I said getting the 49ers right is going to be the key to winning fantasy football in 2021. And I feel like I talked about Elijah Mitchell zero times during that whole discussion of all offseason. What an idiot. What an idiot. I should have at least made a cursory reference to him. But I will say, from just a brass tacks perspective with Mitchell, the reason that I think you can be aggressive is that obviously the ceiling is great, but I think the floor is pretty good too here for Mitchell, because if Trey Sermon was really the number three back or number four back coming out of camp, like, they're not just going to suddenly turn to Sermon and make Mitchell a zero. Like, I think Mitchell in some way is going to be a factor now. So he has that floor of being a factor in one of the best rushing ecosystems in the entire NFL. I mean, that's why we put up with all this Kyle Shanahan BS, is because the potential reward that for living through the Shanahanigans or whatever is a league winning running back. I mean, that's why we do this thing, right? But we know the ceiling is there. I think the floor is better than people think. Like, I was in on drafting Trey Sermon, and I was in on drafting Raheem Mostert. Like, take your shots on these guys. Same thing here. Like, why should, even if Trey Sermon comes back and has the 1A role, which I think is possible, but maybe not as likely as I thought, you know, a couple weeks ago, there's still room for Mitchell there to just basically be Raheem Mostert in that scenario. So if we were taking Mostert in the single digit rounds, which basically everybody was, you should be in on Elijah Mitchell too.
I saw someone else make the joke. I forgot. It's not sad, my guy Mostert, but his first, you know, Mostert injured his kneecap in the first Dan Campbell game. You know, there's some irony there. It's horrible. I know, it's bad. I know. But I have to say, your preseason point of the Niners could not look more prescient. I mean, they scored the most points in the NFL week one, yet were the most frustrating fantasy team.
Yeah,
they had their quarterback. They got their quarterback, got a TD stolen from them at the goal line. Ayuk was a no-show. I had him. I follow the Niners, and the beat writers were clueless on all these things, by the way. I mean, Ayuk. Yeah. I stashed Hasty at the end of my roster because of all these injuries, but not Mitchell. You know, I mean, he was not talked up by the beat writers throughout the preseason. It's a frustrating situation. I promise you it'll remain unpredictable, but in my opinion, the upside, if it does go right, is worth 100% of your fab, because the upside's that of a quote-unquote league winner.
100%. I think we're in lockstep here. All right, let's move on to the trends we love to see and the trends we hate to see. Let's start off positive. Let's start off with the things we love to see. And I want to start off with a couple of quarterbacks who were basically undrafted in almost every format that's not a super flex. Really probably were not starting for teams in week one. Jameis Winston and Teddy Bridgewater were top two, the one and two guys in EPA per dropback in week one. Dalton, number one, what year is this? Number two, what the hell? And number three, which of these two offenses are you more, or which of these two quarterbacks, I guess, are you more confident in maintaining, not top two, you know, level of efficiency per dropback, but maintaining what we saw in week one?
It's definitely Winston, especially with the loss of Judy. Those two QBs are also the top two in ESPN's adjusted QBR. So I wonder if they must weight EPA heavily. You know, toward the end of the season, I saw this stat where a PFF guy was making the claim that Winston's interceptions and his pick sixes were done in game situations where it was the right call to take extra risks. And, you know, he was not throwing them in the wrong situations. I don't know how true that was in the past, but he certainly looked good in his first game. I will say this. I think the current version of Jameis Winston is better than the last year or two of Drew Brees. And it's maybe opening up the playbook. It's just crazy that Marquez Callaway was drafted so aggressively and spent so highly in free agency, and then he doesn't catch any of the 5 touchdown passes. That was the fewest yards in modern era, by the way, for a quarterback to throw 5 TDs. But give me Winston, who will eventually return home indoors as opposed to, you know, Denver and now no Jerry Jeudy. But Bridgewater is clearly way better than Drew Locke. He's very, very accurate. He may not be the best for fantasy with his lack of downfield action, but yeah, these guys are serviceable with New Orleans, a fantastic offensive line and infrastructure. Denver, a really good looking defense. Both those teams are going to be better than most projected.
Yeah, and on your note about Jameis Winston too, like, or on the note about Marquez Callaway, the Saints threw to wide receivers at the lowest rate of any team in Week 1, and I got excited about what we saw from Marquez Callaway in preseason, but you know, I went back and looked at him from his rookie year from like a route running perspective, and all right, like, he was fine, nothing special there. And then the problem there too is like, the once Michael Thomas gets back, like, he's gonna command the targets there. I don't know, Callaway is looking a little risky right now, but we'll see what happens there. And I would just say, make the case though for Teddy Bridgewater, you know, because I do still think that Jameis Winston, despite the fact, yeah, he's obviously more turnover prone, like in the last time we saw him start a full season in 2019 than any other season. But still, I believe it is in Jameis's DNA to be risky, to take chances, and that can be good for the good side of variance for the Saints. Will be there, but at some point though, we're going to get a multi-turnover game, a very frustrating approach from Jameis Winston. I'm not like out on Jameis, but I'm still like not totally in. I'm still like a little skeptical. When it comes to Teddy Bridgewater, though, the only reason I would make the case for Teddy actually being the more impressive guy coming out of Week 1, he was actually under pressure a lot. Pro Football Focus had him under pressure on over 50% of his dropbacks. Number one in the most pressured starting quarterback in the league was Teddy Bridgewater, and still delivered a dynamic performance against a pretty good defense. And Denver, even if they lose Jeudy, which is such a killer, I love Jerry Jeudy, expected him to have a huge year this year. It was looking like he was on his way to a huge year. They're still really good at skill position group. You know, I think KJ Hamler can play. Tim Patrick is so underrated. Cortland Sutton should be back to 100% at some point. Noah Fant, Albert O, really good tight end duo. And the backfield is like a 50-50 split, but both those players are good. So I don't know. I think Denver just has such a great talent ecosystem. But my God, I mean, if we didn't appreciate Sean Payton enough, we do now after like the ecosystem and the build that he put out there in Week 1.
No doubt impressive by the Saints. But yeah, pick up KJ Hamler, Tim Patrick in deeper fantasy leagues, and hopefully Sutton. Yeah, that Week 1 was just shaking the rust off. You got to like what Noah Fant looks like. Got some routes and now looking at more looks without Jeudy. I really like the arrow pointing up for Fant. Such a bummer, Jerry Jeudy. He was going to eat this year, man. He was looking uncoverable out there. And you just get rolled up on like that. There's nothing you can do. Yeah, it's frustrating.
Sucks. At least it wasn't like a Dak. It looked like a Dak level injury, and it wasn't that. So thank God. That's good to see. And yeah, I mean, Tim Patrick, I think, is like an immediate top 40 receiver this year, or the top 40 receiver this week against Jacksonville at the very least. Like, I think he is definitely startable. Ran the second most routes on the team after Cortland Sutton. By the way, more 49ers running back news. They claim Trenton Cannon off waivers from the Baltimore Ravens. So he'll get 25 carries this week, I guess, and get 100 yards. So have fun with that, everybody.
Hold on. I'll circle this all the way back to Denver here. Finally, I promise the last thing I'll talk about my guy, Elijah. Elijah Mitchell faced, and this is a stat nerd episode anyway, he faced 8+ defenders in the box on 36.8% of his carries and finished 37 rush yards over expected, which put him in second place this week behind Melvin Gordon. So yeah. I didn't realize he had that speed to the outside. Anyway, bottom line, Mitchell, yeah, some impressive nerdy stats. And boy, Melvin Gordon is going to be 50% of that split in the backfield, unfortunately, for the Javonte Williams guys.
Yeah, and Melvin Gordon is boosted off like a huge run there at the end in terms of like yards over expectation, everything. But like, Mitchell really got that stuff done. I mean, he really got it done. And he is fast too. 4.38 speed. Like, he's legit. He is basically Raheem Mostert, like, if you want to do a player comparison. So there's all the reason in the world to be in on Elijah Mitchell, the guy that we mentioned 0 times in the offseason. What a tough scene for us. Next one I have here, trends we love to see. This really caught my eye. I mentioned that Teddy Bridgewater was the most pressured quarterback in week one. The least pressured quarterback in week one was Justin Herbert, 12.6% of his dropbacks. Dalton, this was probably the biggest hangup for the Chargers last year. And, you know, sometimes in the offseason, it's like we see things happen in terms of, oh, this team throws resources at a problem, but how quick is it going to take for it to really, you know, gel? Like, the Chargers draft Rashawn Slater in the first round. How long is it going to take him to figure it out? They bring in Corey Linsley in the offseason to play center, some more offensive linemen there as well. Looks like an immediate hit, like an immediate win for the Chargers there, because they were playing Washington, who has a great cast of characters up front with Chase Young, Montez Sweat, and Jonathan Allen. So what are – I feel like we're almost – just because, like, he didn't crush it in fantasy in week one – we're not talking enough about how dynamic Herbert was in that game. Cause I went back and watched, I think he's looked awesome, was great on third down, just delivering some passes right on the money where it needs to be. I feel like we're not high. We're still not high enough on Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Austin Eckler, and Justin Herbert, and maybe even Jared Cook too. I mean, hell.
So I think their Chargers offensive line and Herbert deserve even more credit than what you're saying for a couple of reasons. Yes, Washington's defense, awesome. It was a 10 a.m. body clock game for them traveling across the country.
That's a great point.
And I was just listening to Warren Sharp say, of the bottom 10 in EPA per play on early downs, so when you're throwing it early versus running, the bottom 10 teams, they all lost week one except the Chargers. So what they're asking these offensive linemen to do, and Herbert on third downs, 13 of 16 for 160 yards, 11 first downs and a touchdown. I mean, I want to say this isn't sustainable, but last year Herbert was awesome under pressure. That's another quote unquote not sticky stat. So what he's doing is incredible. I still question Lombardi. Is it a big upgrade at coaching? I don't know. I mean, it didn't look great the first test, actually. So Herbert, the player, is just awesome. And I love the way Mike Williams was used. Now, that one, like Lombardi said, he was going to be used in the Michael Thomas role. Maybe that was some truth to that. So you like to see that. And Herbert's just awesome. Yeah, the offensive line's improved. Now let's see some more passing on first down. And then you got Yahtzee for the fantasy stats.
Yeah, it was nice to see Austin Eckler. I know people are like, oh, he didn't get any targets. Like, give me a break. He'll get targets. I'm not worried about that. But he did get goal line touches, which was great to see. I mean, it's basically anything you wanted to see out of the Chargers offense to be super excited. You got to see it in week one. And yeah, I'm pretty sure Justin Herbert, he was not pressured very often, but the passes that he was pressured, I think he completed every single one of them, or at least was like five of six or something like that. So I'm just doing it off the top of my head. But he was still completely accurate under pressure. So he's going to be the next superstar quarterback. Quarterback in the league, and it just is what it is. So there you go. Let's move on to the next one here. Most of these I have are quarterback stats, because it allows us to kind of, you know, push out to the rest of the league and like the guys that are affected by these players on the team. Obviously, next one, two quarterbacks with a deep passing rate over 20%. Russell Wilson, no surprise there. I don't know about you, but I loved what the Seahawks offense did in week one with all of the play action, the deep shots, obviously, to Lockett and to Metcalf. We're just going to expect this to be one of the most efficient passing games in the NFL. Second guy, though, Baker Mayfield, over 20% of his passes were deep down the field, 20 plus yards. That was pretty interesting to me, especially because they didn't have Odell Beckham in week one, and they're not going to have Odell Beckham in week two.
Yeah, the Seattle play action increase, I think it was twice as much as their usage last year, terrifies me as a Niners fan. The whole NFC West looks so good with Arizona. Metcalf and Lockett, so good there. And that's such a pretty deep ball. Russell Wilson, put that on repeat, man, throwing that such a high, such a pretty deep ball. The Browns, I have Beckham, man. I was out on Beckham last year. This year, I'm like, I'm going to buy him, you know, coming off of his ADP is lower than ever, you know, and there's this all encouraging reports throughout summer. And man, you had to wait for that afternoon game. At least you don't have to wait for any uncertainty week two, because he's already been ruled out. So, I mean, you don't love it. Man, I don't know. I hope he just gets right and he starts. But I guess the lack of contact at this point, it's concerning when he's even going to be usable in fantasy lineups, Beckham.
I know. It is frustrating, because I did the same thing. I bought it back in on Odell Beckham. Like, you know, I think he looked great in 2020, but the risk was always that there's another injury question. And it seems like Beckham is the one who's kind of like, I'm not fully ready yet sort of thing. So I don't know, man. I don't know when we'll see Beckham. But at the same time, though, the Browns offense looked great in week one. Mayfield, like I said, delivering the ball down the field, looking really good and distributing it to a variety of different targets. Anthony Schwartz is a guy that should be on people's radar. Fast, was top 10 in air yards in week one. Jarvis Landry looked great. I think he looked fully recovered from that hip issue in week one. He looks like he could really be undervalued and outkick his ADP. Beckham obviously is going to come back at some point and shake up this target tree. But like right now, you know, there's a lot of like hype about Donovan Peoples-Jones in training camp. It looks like Schwartz is a big winner here that could be picked up off the waiver wire.
Yeah, no, I thought it was Peoples-Jones, but you're totally right. It is Schwartz. And then Njoku is still alive, too. They target him downfield, yeah. And he's, you know, in really a deeper league, someone to at least keep your eye on. And another thing to pay attention to is Jedrick Wills, their left tackle, was carted off. It's a day-to-day injury, but their offense definitely struggled. I know mid-game injuries are different, but their offense definitely noticeably struggled once he left last week. So that's something that could affect, you know, those downfield throws, a dominant left tackle. This week, I like them. They're going to roll, man. Texans coming off the win. I know Tyrod looked good, but, you know, Texans coming off the win and the Browns coming off that tough loss. I feel confident. And I know they're the most used survivor pick right now, but one of three teams with about a 12.5-point spread. But I feel most confident about them. What do you think bouncing back? I mean, the Browns are a good football team, and they should just bully the Texans with their running.
Revenge game for Tyrod. Revenge game for Tyrod Taylor. Although Hugh Jackson's not there anymore, so who's really to get revenge against? I don't know. I like your pick there. I used Rams in the Survivor League last week. Thought it really wanted to use Denver. I'm so pissed that I talked myself out of that. I'm still mad about it because I knew they were going to beat the damn Giants. But anyways, no one cares about that. I like that pick. And overall, too, like when you look at when you look at the Texans roster, like even if Wills doesn't play, Jedrick Wills, he doesn't play at left tackle, who on the Texans is scaring you from a pass rushing perspective? That defense is still so, so soft. Trevor Lawrence made some good plays. He made some rookie mistakes. I think Steven Ruiz from The Ringer compared him to like, he's probably going to be like rookie year Peyton Manning, where you see all the signs of greatness, but he's going to consistently have to shoot them out of bad situations and will throw a lot of interceptions as a result. I think that's what Trevor Lawrence's rookie year is going to be. But you still saw all the cracks in the Texans defense that you would have expected. And yeah, I think they can absolutely get barreled over in this one. I like that call there. Let's move on to this next one here. Not a quarterback one, but we're going to probably end up talking about some quarterbacks here. The Colts and the Lions were top two in running back target rate. Colts, 42.9% of their week one targets, 42.9% went to Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines. I thought that was interesting. Second was the Lions. That's not surprising at 36.4%. I want to talk about the Lions in a second because I'm in a little bit of a I'm confused about how I think about the Lions. But on the Colts specifically, Carson Wentz got nothing going downfield, barely threw the ball past 20 yards. What did you make of this Colts performance in week one? I know the offensive line is not looking as great as it's built up to be, mostly I think because these guys have been injured all offseason.
Truthfully, I watched Game Mix. It has eight games on at once, and this was the one that they decided not. Weirdly, there was the Jacksonville-Houston one made the Big Eight, but not this. So this is a game I watched the least of, but I know Taylor had a TD called back, and this offensive line's banged up right now. It will get healthier once Eric Fisher returns and Nelson and Braden Smith get healthier. I think a big, big season's in store for Jonathan Taylor. You love to see the targets there. I know they just paid Hines, but I mean the fact that Taylor was out there and getting thrown like that with Wentz being a question mark, he is clearly going to dump the ball off to them. So you're just encouraged if you're a Jonathan Taylor guy. At least I was. What were your thoughts?
That's kind of how I thought about it too, because obviously there's the whole like, well, he just beat up on bad teams last year, blah 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 blah, but that's a question mark. But the biggest one was, is he going to still catch passes? And you know, was the fact that he caught passes last year a product of Phillip Rivers, or was it part of the infrastructure of the offense? And it seems like it's much more part of the infrastructure of the offense, at least after week one. I still think Wentz is, you know, Carson Wentz is Carson Wentz. Like when he gets pressured, when there's like the play isn't totally in the flow of it, he's still scatterbrained. I think there's still a chance that he could be 2019 Carson Wentz, but we will see. He still looked more like 2020 Carson Wentz in week one to me, but I don't know. I'm with you though, that I was encouraged more by the target load for Jonathan Taylor than discouraged by any of like the offensive inefficiency parts of it.
He's so good. I'm telling you, gigantic games are to come. He would be a top five player for me down moving forward. And Detroit, I'm so upset I don't have more DeAndre Swift. I know he remains an injury durability concern. And every week the Lions are not going to run 92 plays or whatever. But man, he's get all the high value touches. Jamal Williams is solid too, but Swift is just so good, man. What are your thoughts on him?
That was what I was going to ask you about the Lions because. You know, in some way, I think there's like been a bit of an overreaction to what we saw in week one from their fantasy production. I mean, the total on their game with the Packers is 48. I mean, look, the Packers could the theoretical Packers that we think we know and love could blow out the Lions like 40-7 or something like that, you know, almost get to that themselves, could the Green Bay Packers with that defense on the other side. But I don't know, the Packers are a question mark after week one, after what we saw there. I'm not like worried about them long term, but we'll see. I mean, they should be able to barrel over this defense. But like you mentioned, I think we need to kind of take a stand on who are the Lions from a philosophical perspective? Because they obviously, as you mentioned, they run the most plays of any team in week one by a pretty good gap. Like they were way up there. That is not sustainable from an overall team volume perspective. And I thought this was interesting. In the first half, they were 17th in terms of seconds per play, like their pace of play. They were first in the second half. Like there are going to be a lot of games where the Lions are throwing themselves out of a deficit. And Jared Goff, like for all of his problems, isn't CJ Beathard or something. You know, he's not Nick Mullins. He's fine. He's like a bottom level or average starting quarterback. And they have a pretty good offensive line too. So like could Goff have a lot of hollow yardage games where he's pumping the ball to TJ Hockenson, Jamal Williams, and DeAndre Swift like we saw in week one? Absolutely. But is it going to be as prolific as it was in week one every single week? That's the part I'm kind of stuck up on. And are the target totals for those three players so concentrated? It just seems tough for me that like at some point some wide receiver is not going to, you know, get an inefficient 90 target season or something like that. I don't know. I'm a little stuck on this one.
It's just that all the targets are going to go to Hockenson and the backs. I mean, Hockenson did that against the Niners D that held tight ends to the fewest fantasy points for what it's worth last year. But I'm just still in on Hockenson because he just looks so – sorry, Swift. He looks so good. But – and I'll counter with this too. Their offensive line, that's sneaky to be really, really good actually with Penny Sewell struggling in the preseason. Yep. But Nick Bosa looked at the tape and he said afterwards, Sewell was forced to move to left tackle because Taylor Decker's out and he played way better. So it's clear that he was just learning a new position in preseason. So Decker is a young, good left tackle. You get Sewell in there and Ragnow at center, and it's got a pretty good potential there. But I hear you. Not every game's going to have 90-plus plays. I mean, that really, really helped the Lions put up fantasy stats this week, no question. I mean, there was an onside kick and a Debo fumble. I mean, there were two drives at the end that totally, you know, was like an extra 25 plays.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Yeah, so there's a lot there that I think Swift is going to maintain a pretty crucial receiving role for this team. Hockenson's a lock. He ran a route on 98% of their passing plays. Like that's as good as you want from a tight end. Like he's not out there doing blocking and stuff like that. You know, he's a full field monster.
How do you not have him top? I mean, I had Pitts aggressively, but I mean, I think Hockenson's right there after the Waller and Kittle. God, those guys are so valuable in fantasy, by the way. I think Waller had more targets than the Saints receivers combined, actually, or is right there. So what do you think? I mean, Hockenson, is he not the number three? I mean, why not? I mean, he's going to be looking at this amount of targets every game. He looks great, right? I mean, I know Pitts quietly had the air yards and he ran the inlines and stuff, but and Mark Andrews has bigger games to come. But my guy Kittle, how could you rank Kittle ahead of Hockenson given their usage?
It's a great question. I mean, the funny thing about the Ayuk situation is that it actually perfectly encapsulated the problem with all three of these guys, is that it's going to be almost like this is what it's going to look like probably every single week. One of them is going to have a monster game. One of them is going to have an eye game like Kittle had, you know, like 70 yards or something. And one of them is going to be kind of left out in the cold. It won't be, I don't think it will always be as extreme as frickin' Debo Samuel is, like, you know, leads the NFL and wide receiver yards, and then
47% target share. You mean, you know, it's not going to get a 47% target share each week? Yeah, probably.
I'm guessing not. So there's that. And then I don't think Ayuk is going to, like, whoever the third is going to be a stone zero every single week. But it was a dramatic. We keep coming back to the 49ers, bro. We keep coming back to the 49ers. Like, it's not going to be that dramatic every single week, but it is a perfect encapsulation of what it, like, the issue with this passing game overall. So to your point, yeah, I think that there's a perfectly reasonable chance that, like, Hockenson at least enters that group with Kittle, Waller, and, you know, behind Travis Kelce. Waller, oh my God, what an absurd usage. That game, that was one of the, we're going to talk about the Ravens in a minute. That was a strange game, and I kind of want to get your thoughts on it overall, but we'll come back to that. Let's move to things that we hate to see, and maybe we'll still talk about the 49ers, but it is hard to say. trends we hate to see. Ryan Tannehill's play action rate on Sunday was 11.6%. In 2020, it was 36.4%, the highest among starting quarterbacks last year. I know the immediate temptation is, well, they fell behind. You know, the Arizona Cardinals were giving it to them. It shouldn't matter that much, okay? That's a bad sign. I feel really weird about the Titans after week one. I mean, it was about as bad of a debut as you can get. And, like, to see them go so hard away from the one thing, like, play action that made them so efficient, that is a little disturbing, especially since they changed offensive coordinators to Todd Downing, who has been a coordinator before and does not have, like, a great history.
Yeah, I'm very concerned. I was concerned in the year of the move from Arthur Smith to Todd Downing. Not that Arthur Smith balled in his debut, but being a head coach has other responsibilities, and I'm not going to write him off. But this is a concern in Tennessee. For sure, the play action was just so reliant on their success and playing with the lead, obviously, for Derrick Henry. So Corey Davis last year was top five in yards per route run and top 25 in target share. I mean, the odds were extremely slim that Julio Jones was going to match Tennessee's wide receiver two production from last year, let alone exceed it, like many people were projecting, because he's Julio Jones, you know, Inner Circle Hall of Famer. They also lost Jonnu Smith. I mean, and their defense is stinks. I mean, maybe bottom five
units. Defense is so bad.
I mean, yeah, there's zero pass rush. So I don't know why. I mean, the reason everyone's picking them to win the division is just because of a battle of attrition. You know, it was a bad division. This is not a good football team, and I worry. But obviously, better fantasy days ahead for Tannehill and the receivers and Derrick Henry. But yeah, man, you're very concerned about the play caller, because the play caller switch is not going to go back suddenly.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't come out and have, like, you know, a huge play action rate, that would be very disturbing in week two. Thing is, too, like, I mean, there is some, like, flukiness to their week one performance, mostly because of how much Taylor Lewan got his ass kicked by Chandler Jones. And I mean, Chandler Jones, like, I think I said this on Chris Harris's podcast this morning, like, Chandler Jones didn't just, like, you know how, like, Hassan Reddick had, like, a 5-sack game for the Cardinals last year, but that was one of those, like, he just speed rushed around to, like, a bad tackle. Chandler Jones was out there, like, doing it every which way. Like, you know, it was like teaching tape, basically, what he was putting on out there. I mean, it was about as good as you could get, to the point that he's, like, you can see him on the broadcast copy, like, strutting up and down the sideline, because he wants to get paid after they paid J.J. Watt all that money. So good timing for a 5-sack performance. But you would assume Taylor Lewan at some point is going to get a little more comfortable coming back from an ACL injury. Although Seattle's pass rush looked really good in week one. Seattle, Tennessee, they made it in week two. So I'm not panicking on the Titans yet, but, like, my alarm bells are a little, like, they're at least spinning. We're not, like, full siren yet, but they're at least spinning after that week one performance. I don't really know what to think. Hopefully we see these guys just crush it in week two and we can move on from that, but we shall see. Couple other notes I wanted to throw in here. We can skip this pressured quarterback one. We talked about Teddy Bridgewater. Zach Wilson was the other one. Zach Wilson's going to get rocked all year long. I don't know if you have too many Jets thoughts.
Becton being out against the New England front seven is not ideal.
Not ideal. I still want to buy low on Elijah Moore, who had a ton of air yards in week one. And Corey Davis, I think, is an every week fantasy starter at this point.
Agreed on both. Yeah, and Elijah Moore is still like $10 in Yahoo DFS, I believe. That's the minimum. So I'm with you. Yep.
Nice. Okay, that's a good note to file away. Lastly, for things we hate to see, I want to hit on this Ravens stuff real quick, because I don't know, man. The Ravens did not look very good, like, against the Raiders. They should have. I know that Lamar had some fumbles that were mostly a product of Tyson Williams giving up some some heat on him, and I think that's probably why, from a pass protection angle, that Williams was not out there when people really wanted him to. I think he missed his damn rushing yardage prop by 1 yard because of all those pass protection woes. So tough scene there if you were invested in that way. But overall, the Ravens should have put that game away, man. And like, if they were a good team, I think they, or excuse me, if they were an elite team, like a top of the AFC team, I think they would have put that game away. The biggest problem to me was just how much they struggled to protect Lamar last week. Alejandro Villanueva came away from, like, he was a big problem. He was a huge problem, got destroyed by Max Crosby. Lamar was sacked on 9.1% of his dropbacks. Where are you at with the Ravens in this one? Because that was not a good performance.
Yeah, I know that was with the former top five pick Farrell, healthy scratch too for the Raiders defensive line. Yeah, the Ravens are dealing with a lot of injuries and weirdness, but yeah, it was definitely an uninspiring performance. Tyson Williams looks great, and then I guess he blows the pass protection, and then he's mothballed later. I know you want to talk about Sammy Watkins. So you know that he's surpassed 65 receiving yards in 3 games. Over the last 2+ seasons, they've all occurred in week one. All of them have occurred in week one. That's the only time he's surpassed 65 yards last 3 seasons is in week one.
The healthiest he'll ever be, Dalton. It's the healthiest he'll ever be is week one.
I'd still rather Marquise Brown moving forward, but who knows, a new situation. I hope Lamar stays healthy. And you're right. It was a discombobulated, kind of a messed up performance, Baltimore. But it's the first game with Las Vegas with fans. They were tuned up all day. I mean, it was a cool
scene.
They were pretty jacked up. It was a great, what a fun game. I mean, back and forth. How wild was that? That you think it's over. And of course, the false start. The Raiders do a false start in that situation. And the wild pick. So some fun primetime games, man. The Bucks on Thursday night and then that Monday night. Or I didn't tune in to the ESPN. I didn't realize it was also on ESPN2. I missed the Manning telecast. I caught all the highlights and stuff. But did you listen to that broadcast?
No. And I don't want to like burst anybody's bubble about the Manning thing. But I don't care one bit.
You're out?
Like,
you're out? Okay. All right.
It's not like if I would, I just want to watch the game, you know? Like, I know, I understand the appeal to it for some people, and it sounded like some people liked it. And like, if you like it, you like it, like your thing. That's fine with me. But like, I'm watching a football game to like watch the football game. I barely want like the commentator's thoughts. I don't That's like true. Really need the Peyton Manning experience, like Peyton goofing around during it or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just not for me.
Fair. Firm, but fair. I like Peyton, but I hear you. And half the time I mute the when I'm the commentators. So that's fair. So so Baltimore, they'll get it together one game off, or is this a concern?
Dude, even the you know, when everybody geeks out about like the All-22 like college football playoff thing, when people geek out about that. I don't know if you ever watched that, like the literally the game and all. I'm not being like the tape guy here, but like, you know, I watch more goddamn film than anybody. I watch a lot of tape, but when I want to watch a live football game, I just want to watch it like I've always watched it. I feel like I sound like a 50-year-old man at this point, but like, I just want to watch the game the way I've always watched the game, and the way I want to consume it is the way I always have. That's my take.
Romo
on that.
Is good. I like Romo. I like when Romo calls.
Oh,
out
no,
the
no,
play.
I'm not. Like I'm not Romo. Saying like that's. But that's what I mean. Like, I want to. I like Romo too.
Yeah.
I could understand why Romo would be annoying if like you're getting your butt beat by Patrick Mahomes and like he's just fawning over Mahomes for a full 60 minutes.
That's.
I know Mark Sessler from NFL has mentioned this to me and has mentioned it publicly several times before, how irritating that can be as a Browns fan, having just faced them recently twice. But anyways, like, I love a good commentator, but I'm just saying like the All-22 angle, or like the coaches talk, like that coaches room that they do for the college football thing. Like, I don't need all that crap. Like, I just want to watch two goofballs or three. That's fine. I'll take Greasy and Riddick and Levy. Three goofballs, two goofballs talking about the game and showing me the game from the angle that I've always consumed it at. And then when I want to watch the damn tape, I'll do it on my own time. Nobody has cared about the last 3 minutes of this podcast. Not one person.
I will tell you that Sunday night, I don't know, but Collinsworth, I'll be watching Kansas City at Baltimore, man. What a game. Another primetime one looking good. Let's see if Baltimore bounces back. I'd take the 3.5 points there. The home dog. People are probably down on Baltimore. I think they'll rough it up and be physical there. What do you think, man? Mahomes is just such money in fantasy because he only throws it to Kelce and Tyreek Hill.
So great.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, yeah, it really is. So that should be a fun one Sunday night.
I know, like Great snap share for CEH, like never left the field, which was a change from what we saw last year. Mecole Hardman running the full complement of routes, but ball's still going to, I mean, why not? Ball's still going to the two best players at their respective positions, or at least, you know, in the argument for Tyreek Hill. Like Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, that's where the ball goes. It's great. Mahomes 3-0 against the Chiefs the last, or against the Ravens the last three times. He's averaged over 370 passing yards and scored 10 total touchdowns. And I think I'd take the Chiefs minus 3.5 in that game. I think I'm feeling pretty confident right now with them coming in to this spot. And Sammy Watkins, though, is interesting. You mentioned Sammy Watkins earlier. Led the team in routes run, led the team with the 36.2% of the air yards, led the team in targets. I know it was the week one thing, but we've got a revenge game for Kansas City here. Nice. I don't know. I think both of those. I do like the one thing that was encouraging, I think, in week one for the Ravens was Sammy Watkins and Hollywood Brown. Like those two guys, you cannot overstate the difference from going from the husk of Dez Bryant and Miles Boykin to Sammy Watkins on the other end of Lamar Jackson's throws. Even if Sammy Watkins is an average starting receiver at best, that's a big jump.
Yeah, and you know, Mahomes should be noted too in September. What is he, 12-0 or something with 50 touchdowns, zero picks or whatever? The stats are video game like in September throughout his career. So yeah, and you always feel silly betting against him. But that should be a good one. We got to talk about another prime timer too, right? The Thursday night game. Let's not short shift that one.
Yeah, let's not short shift this barn burner. let's talk some single game DFS fantasy preview here for the New York Giants, 0-1. At Washington Football, 0-1. This game only has a 40.5 projected point total. Washington is favored. I think they should be favored. I think they're probably the better team, even with Taylor Heinicke. What is your read on this game? Because I do my article, the preview for the single game slates for every DF, like the Thursday, Monday, Sunday Night Football. This one's kind of tough because these teams are rather top heavy from a fantasy angle. And they both have big questions now with Taylor Heinicke behind center, with Daniel Jones being Daniel Jones. There's a bit of questions here. So what's your read on this one?
Yeah, tougher to fill out a lineup than last week when it was just so many riches. Now it's
so easy.
You're right.
Yeah.
And now Sterling Shepard at 13 is pretty much a no-brainer. Your guy here, by the way. How good
did he hell
look?
Yeah.
I mean, man, he looked so good. And Barkley, you probably got to go Gibson over Barkley at this point. I mean, give another wait and see game with Barkley, especially DFS. I know that fantasy managers in season long have some tough choices this week, especially the Thursday game. And, you know, how many snaps is he going to get? But Barkley hopefully was limited week one, always knowing that they're playing on Thursday night in week two. But then Jones, the tougher matchup in Washington, but $3 cheaper than Heinicke. And often with fantasy, you just want the quarterback who's playing from behind, you know, the underdog. You're going to have to throw more. He got that nice garbage time rushing stat last week too. So I don't know. What are your thoughts? This is definitely a tougher week to fill this single game lineup.
It's much tougher because I made a couple builds like without either of the quarterbacks, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, right? Like that doesn't make much sense. But Antonio Gibson, I think, is the one I keep coming back to. The role that we saw from Gibson out of week one was about exactly what you would have wanted. Led the backfield in snaps, got 20 carries, actually ran more routes then JD McKissick and got 5 targets. Like, boom, lock it in. That's about the best case scenario that you could hope for Antonio Gibson. Obviously, Melvin Gordon had no problem with this defense in week one. I'm not worried about Gibson at all. He'd be the guy that I come back to. Sterling Shepard, as you mentioned, it cannot be understated. Led the team in routes, runs, snaps, slot routes, targets, yards after catch per reception, baby. Love to see that from Sterling Shepard. He's a lock at 13. No interest in Galladay at 20, really no interest in Barkley. And I mean, Sterling Shepard, Daniel Jones, like, God, I mean, he's as erratic as ever. Right. And the thing is too, he was only pressured on 75%. He was kept clean, on 75% of his dropbacks. It just falls apart at the first sign of heat for Daniel Jones. The fumbles are always there. What are your thoughts on Heinicke though, as a guy to like, potentially keep this Washington offense afloat? Because great usage for Terry McLaurin, awesome usage for Logan Thomas. Even De'Ami Brown, who's only $10 in our single game DFS, ran a route on over 92% of Washington's passing plays. I still think Heinicke's like kind of, he's okay. You know, he's not like the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I mean, there were reports he was out playing Fitzpatrick in June, and he was he gave to arguably Tampa Bay their best fight in the playoffs last year. So he could be serviceable. That's why I said in Superflex, I mean, in competitive, deeper Superflex leagues, he should, I mean, there's an argument for a 100% fab bid. By the way, getting these guys in week two, theoretically, is better than in the middle of the season. You have them for the whole year. So I think Heinicke, he could just be like a lateral move from Fitzpatrick. You know, Fitzpatrick was always a long shot to last the whole year at this stage of his career, given his durability past too. But I hate to see it week one happen to him.
Yeah, I
was rooting for him for sure. I know he's your guy. You guys are close buds. But I think Heinicke could step right in and be totally, totally serviceable.
Yeah, I hate it for Fitz, man. It sucks. Just like this was his big chance with no like first round pick.
And McLaurin, this year he's finally going to have a real quarterback and another receiver on the outside, Samuel, to take away attention. And now here we are week two and he has neither.
Neither. Oh, God. I said it way too often that he like avoided the Allen Robinson curse for his career. I said it too often this offseason because now he's like trending back towards like, you know, these goofball list of quarterbacks. But Taylor Heinicke, like, by the way, Taylor Heinicke, the pride of Old Dominion. We can never not call Taylor Heinicke the pride of Old Dominion University. I always stand up for my Virginia guys. Heinicke is aggressive, though, like in the same kind of devil may care fashion that Ryan Fitzpatrick brings to his game, like sometimes tries to write some checks that his arm can't cash. He actually threw into tight windows per Next Gen Stats on 26% of his passes in week one. That was the third highest among quarterbacks. And it's a continuation of how he played in the playoffs last year, 20.5%. Like, he's an aggressive guy, will shoot the ball downfield. And I do think this is a really good, even without Samuel there, I still think this is a really good infrastructure for a quarterback in Washington. Got a good feature back. Got a number one receiver. Logan Thomas looks like 0% a fluke. You know, like he is the pride of Lynchburg, Virginia. Logan Thomas, excuse me. He looks like a total like locked in. I think he's going to be like not quite TJ Hockenson, not quite Kyle Pitts, but right there with maybe Tyler Higbee at the top of that like next group. I still am very excited about Washington's offense, even with Taylor Heinicke instead of Ryan Fitzpatrick.
And one final note I'll add about Antonio Gibson. This was like buried in this report right at the end of the preseason that he's supposedly had that turf toe injury drained and it's all good. He says it fixed it. I mean, if I had heard that 2 weeks earlier, I'd been drafting him at the wheel in the end of the first rounds more. That's encouraging if true. And he's healthy and set up for a monster year if he continues to see increased usage as a receiver like he did in week one.
So just before we get out of here on a season long note with Saquon Barkley, what is like your breaking point with Saquon? Where are you just kind of in the, you got to play him and see what happens? Or is there like a threshold of running backs where, okay, if I have like Melvin Gordon or something, I'd play him over Saquon Barkley?
I mean, I have Damian Harris in a couple leagues. You tell me, Harmon, who would you start? Harris? I mean, Harris is the doghouse. He might get benched completely, or
maybe
he could, you know, run all over the Jets. I mean, I don't know. Well, who would you? I'm debating decisions just like that myself. So I don't feel strongly, man. I don't know. I mean, Barkley's clearly not. You know, he's clearly getting eased back into action.
Yeah, I have Harris running back 18. I think I have Barkley running back 16 or 17 right now. You know, obviously that's
right
subject
there
to change. But yeah. So right there, and I think you can weigh, I mean, what's the difference between running back 18 and running back 16? Like, that's perfectly within the same range. So, I mean, yeah, Damian Harris looked so good. And I mean, I'm sure Bill Belichick is, like, incensed by how it happened. You know, like, they're driving to win that game. Mac Jones has looked good all game. They were clearly the better offense overall, the Patriots over the Dolphins. Frickin' Harris coughs it up in that moment. Tough scene. But, God, he looked so good all day. And I do think the one thing I come back to with Damian Harris is the fact that Ramondre Stevenson, like the guy that's kind of lurking behind him, also fumbled, blew a huge pass protection that got Mac Jones hit low. I think it was a penalty, actually, that hit too. So I do think that like makes me encourage that like they might just, okay, fine, Harris, like go, you know, they don't have like someone to clearly turn it back to type of thing.
Yeah, J.J. Taylor got some buzz. He's 5'5", though. I don't think he's going to carry the load.
Totally different.
Damian Harris, I hope. Mike Reese came out and said already, you know, he might be looking at a reduced role, and he's pretty tuned into that franchise. So I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Stevenson. Well, funny thing about that is, like, every league I have Harris, I made sure of backing him up with Stevenson. So just what a hilarious – I mean, lose to both of them in the doghouse after one
so
week.
So naturally,
I mean,
it'll be Taylor.
Wild.
Naturally,
right,
it will
exactly
be J.J. Taylor. I think that's the kind of question. And I come back to, like, what can you live with the whole Saquon Barkley thing? Like, can you bench him for Damian Harris or Melvin Gordon or someone in that tier? And can you then stomach, like, if he goes, if he's suddenly a full workload? Because that's the thing. We're not going to know until we know with Saquon Barkley. I think it's very easy to say, like, okay, stick Brandon Ayuk on your bench until you see him running a full complement of routes and clearly, you know, ready to rock from this whole situation. That's easy because receiver is not as hard to figure it out. With running back, though, like, we're not going to know that Brandon – I mean, we're not going to know that Saquon Barkley – love that I got another Niners mention in there. We're not going to know that Saquon Barkley is back until – he just has like a 20-touch game and scores a touchdown and goes over 110 yards or something. Like, we're never going to know that until we know that. And that could be Thursday. That could be Thursday night. So it's basically like there's no right answer that Dalton and I can tell you as listeners and people out there. There's just like, what can you live with? Can you live with Saquon Barkley, you know, ramming it down Washington right on Thursday night, and then he's on your bench and you play Damian Harris, who gets 10 carries for 50 yards or something, and you feel like an idiot? If you can live with that, that's fine. And then you just move on forward knowing that Saquon Barkley's back.
Yeah, if you have an alternative that's solid, I'm fine with it. And then just say 10 days, Barkley hopefully is closer to 100%, you know, week three, hopefully he's a full go then. So yeah, it's just obviously just dependent on your alternatives, but it's a tricky situation, no question, without an obvious answer here. But hopefully he looks better than he did week one. He was running a lot of east-west, yeah. but to be expected, and hopefully they're going to increase his workload. And man, that guy should obviously be looking at a ton of touches when he's capable of them.
No doubt. All right, well, Dalton, we covered a lot here today. We covered the 49ers in depth as was must. It had to be done. It had to be done. We did a lot of stat work. We did the Thursday night preview. We got a lot done here today, and I feel like I got a lot smarter, and now I might be able to actually write my article for the end of the week here. So thank you to that. I appreciate you joining me. If you're on Twitter, you can follow me if you want, at @MattHarmon_BYB, and you should follow @DaltonDelDon on Twitter for fantasy news and analysis from our whole team. Make sure you're following @YahooFantasy. And of course, while you're waiting to see the next tweet that our great Trevor Lewis, the social editor, sends out, you should listen to podcasts. It's the best time of the year to be a sports fan. And if you're looking to make a little scratch on betting on sports, you'll want to make sure that you are subscribed to Yahoo Sportsbook Daily on your platform of choice. Great stuff there. Absolutely love it. Dalton's going to be back on the show tomorrow with Liz Loza for a fantasy preview of all the Sunday and Monday games for week two. I'll be back on Saturday with a DFS-focused preview with TJ Hernandez from 4 for 4. Until then, we're out.